You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. It's the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jays.
Hey there, welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast, and I want to thank you for making this part of your regular routine, your daily grind, Monday through Friday. I am John Corrales of the Raining Jays, here to kind of wrap up the road trip. I'm back in Boston now. I flew back from Los Angeles earlier on Tuesday, and basically my whole day, because of the time zone switch, land in Boston somewhere around 9:30 p.m. So my whole day was flying and traveling. Now I'm here. It's late at night. And doing this podcast is just kind of put a bow on this West Coast swing. So a few random thoughts here just to kind of go through and look at everything with a fresh mind. Then in segment two, I'm going to share the conversation I had with Brad Stevens. Brad and I had about an eight-minute conversation. If you didn't read my story on MassLive.com, I wrote a story with my conversation with Brad. It was a little one-on-one conversation I had about the human connection and his role in the team, and more than I included in the story. But my story did include other things. It also included something from Marcus Smart and from Kyrie. So if you do want to go to Mass Live and search for my story on the human connection that Brad and the team has been making, please do that. But I'm going to share with you the entire conversation I had with him in the second segment. And then in the third segment, I will include the radio appearance I had on The Zone in Bangor, Maine with Rich Kimball, just so you can get a little bit of that basketball conversation. Rich and I have a weekly conversation on Tuesdays on The Zone in Bangor, Maine. And so that's going to serve as your little kind of Q&A. This is what's going on in the Celtics world. So that's going to be in segment three. All of you new listeners, I want to thank you for listening. Don't usually do the solo podcast, but it's been a long day. I think Jay is on a flight as we speak. So I think he took a red eye out of LA. So he's probably somewhere over Utah as I'm recording this. Jam is probably fast asleep, getting ready for his next piece of legislation that he's writing in the criminal justice reform pursuit. So I am here. So I just want to kind of look back at this road trip and kind of take a quick peek at how it went. My first road trip out west, so it was an interesting experience for me. It was my first time in California. It was my first time covering the team on an extended road trip. I am relatively new to the beat writing thing, even though I have been covering the team, whether it's through podcasting or writing as a person without that level of access, through analysis and freelancing and things like that. My trip started off on the wrong foot because they lost my bags. And I guess one of the lessons I'm trying to learn is trying to travel without a checked bag. But it's hard to do when you're my size at 6'5 and a size 14 shoe and you're trying to be somewhere traveling from city to city to city over the course of 6 days, 7 days. So they lost my bag. They got it back to me, but that was an ordeal, and that took me away from some of what was happening at Oracle Arena, so I didn't get to experience every minute out on the floor pregame at Oracle, which was a little bit disappointing. And one of the things that I really wanted to experience at Oracle was the craziness, which didn't happen because the Celtics came out strong and blew out the Warriors. That was the first game back from an East Coast trip. The Warriors retired. They've been having their problems. Klay Thompson recently called out the fans for not supporting the team, not jumping up when things, good things happen. So they're having their issues, but a win like that is very important to go out there and beat the Warriors by a very wide margin. So, but I didn't get the full Oracle experience. I felt like I was very excited to go to Oracle. And one of the things that I never really get to experience is that walking around the arena, getting that full, this is what the arena is, what the fans see in the arena when they're walking around. So I got a little taste of that at Oracle. The Celtics played obviously extraordinarily well. That was a very engaged Celtics team coming off of that plane ride, that mystical plane ride, that they were out there to kind of prove something. And I think the thing that game really showed is that when the Celtics are very much engaged, that they can be a very, very good team. The Warriors, obviously, not their A game, but still a very good win for the Celtics, and encouraging that whenever they do get to the playoffs here, whatever that is, wherever, whatever seed that is, that they're going to go out there and I think perform better generally than what they have. Then they went into Sacramento, that Kings Arena, that golden something. I don't even remember the name of the new place. It's so many names of places in Sacramento. But that arena was cool, very cool. It's a new building, the biggest screen that I've seen. That scoreboard in the middle of the floor was huge. A good crowd, a good arena, lots of Celtics fans everywhere. That's the one thing that I noticed. Lots of Celtics fans everywhere on these trips. They travel well. Celtics Nation is everywhere. They really represented well. The Kings are going to be dangerous. The Celtics now have practice on Wednesday, which we will be there for, and then a game on Thursday. That's going to be a very, very difficult game, and I'm preparing you guys now. That's not going to be an easy game for the Celtics. That first game back from their West Coast trip, look what happened to the Warriors. The Celtics and the Kings are going to be that's going to be a tough one. The Kings run fast. And the Celtics, I don't know how tired they're going to be. I'll tell you what, I got off of that plane, and my day, I woke up, I had breakfast, I packed, and I got to the airport. And when I got off that plane, a direct flight from LAX to Logan, nice spacious seat, obviously not the seats that those guys travel in, but it wasn't a very difficult travel day. And when I got off that flight, man, I was worn out. Traveling wears you out. These guys travel in extraordinarily nice arrangements. Their plane is the best you can get, and they stay in the best hotels and all that stuff. But it's a grind. It's a grind for them too. You know, if you've traveled, it doesn't matter whether you're in a nice seat or in a bad seat. It's worse if you're in a bad seat, but even if you're in a nice seat, comfortable, whatever, by the time you get off that plane, it's just like, oh, God, being pressurized up there, just not being able to move around much, especially with these tall guys. I mean, the plane is the plane. If you're taller than 6'1", standing up on a plane is not easy. It's not like you get to do jumping jacks on that plane. Those guys are, a lot of those guys, it's cramped quarters. You got to walk around hunched. It's not easy. So, as an aside, the travel gets to be a lot. It is no wonder. It's not surprising to me that Kyrie was so adamant about getting out of it. We got to get out of here, man. Like, that was, I felt that. I felt that for real. So, but that they're going to have a day to kind of shake off some of that stuff. So it's good that they have 2 days off before that, but that first game back from a trip is going to be, it's going to be interesting. And hopefully the Celtics can kind of come out strong, because, losing that game is going to be, that's going to hurt their seeding. And I'm not sure if there's any particular seed that they might want to go for, but The Pacers won and the Sixers won. So they're both 43-25. They're two full games up on the Celtics, who are 41-27. So the Celtics, they want to at least, I think, get that home court in that first round. They're not going to get home court in the second or third round. That's done, unless there's some kind of crazy upset. But that's going to be an interesting scenario here. And I'm going to have a piece out on Mass Live, by the way. By the time you hear this, go search for this. Just breaking down the rest of the schedule and just some of the key matchups moving forward that could impact the seeding. The Celtics could go as high as 3, could go down as low as 5. I don't think they're going to fall down below 5 because that's 5.5 games. They're 5.5 games ahead of Brooklyn with 14 to play. That's going to be an epic collapse if that happens. So they're going to be in that 3-4-5 range. So back to the West Coast trip. The Lakers game, I didn't like the Lakers game very much. That I felt like was, maybe it was the nightlife thing. Maybe they were, when you're out in LA for that long, you want to go out, you enjoy it and everything. They came on that first quarter and it was bad, but they responded well. They responded well. So the Celtics had a blowout win, they had a gritty win, and they had the play like crap, but still win anyway. Three different types of wins. I don't want to get too much into that Lakers game. It was what it was. The Clippers game, I think they were at the end of that run in Los Angeles, I think they were pretty much done. There was not much effort being put forth by anyone. There were some very, very lazy closeouts. There were very lazy plays all the way around. And I don't think anybody was innocent. I think everybody was just kind of done by that point. And so, but what's wild is the Celtics still shot 48.5%. They still shot 39% from 3. They still forced like 20 turnovers, and they scored 20 points off of those turnovers. Those three numbers would tell you, wow, Celtics won that game. And they didn't, because they played zero defense. And defense is effort. And defense is communication. And if you don't have that effort or communication, then it's not going to be there. After the game, Marcus Smart said, if we clean up some of the communication, things are going to be fine. Al Horford, sitting next to him, said, preach, when he said it. So the team still feels confident. After all of that, a 3-1 road trip, coming back home, they feel confident that they're going to be in a good place. And it's not how the team wanted it to go, but at 3-1 coming off of that road trip and in a position to be the third seed. Sure, we all wanted them to be the top seed, but they're not. And that's just where they are. They feel good. I can tell you, I think there's a lot of confidence in that locker room, minus obviously like a couple of guys who were struggling personally. But I think as a team, as a group, as a whole, there's a lot of confidence in there. And we'll see if it's misguided or not, but that's my impression of the West Coast swing. That those guys went out there, I think they cleaned some things up. I think Kyrie has a better attitude. He had that piece in Yahoo. He talked to Chris Haynes where he apologized for how he handled things. You can take that for what it's worth. If you don't like it, I can understand why some people have a negative reaction to it. You can take it at face value and say, this is a 26-year-old kid. And if you listen to my upcoming conversation with Brad Stevens, I refer to him as a 26-year-old kid, not in a derogatory way, but at 26 years old, you don't know. You don't know what you don't know. it's a very young and dumb time in your life. I was 26, and there's a very young and dumb time in my life. And if you're 26, or if you're not quite 26, and you think you've got everything figured out, there's a big news flash coming for you. And you can say I'm full of shit right now, but I'm going to tell you, when you're my age and you're mid-40s, you're going to look back and you're going to say, wow, I thought I had it all figured out at 26. And you do not. You do not. And that's just how it is. And it's, I don't know if you're the same as me, but sometimes I look at these guys and I think that they're older. They feel old because they're professional athletes. They feel like they're older than they are. They don't come off as 20-something-year-old kids. But to me, that's what most of them are. 20-something-year-old kids who are learning their way in life. They just happen to have extraordinary talents. And again, not a derogatory thing towards Kyrie. obviously they're all grown men. Like, I don't want to make it sound like it's insulting. They're all obviously grown men, adults who handle their business. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, like, in as a kind of colloquialism, as a kind of just casual place in life, that you just don't know all of the things you're going to know. You're so young that you're it's tough for you to understand exactly how young you really are in your mid-20s. So it's interesting. It's just interesting, and maybe someday I'll get a chance to sit down with Kyrie and kind of talk about that progression, and because I understand that a lot of things are escalated, or I'm sorry, maybe that's not the right word, but accelerated is the word that I'm looking for. Accelerated. When you're that age in the NBA and you're trying to be a professional and be a leader, you're asked to do a lot that some 25, 26, 27-year-olds aren't asked to do in other professional settings. That I've been in this world for a long time, and I haven't had a lot of 25-year-old managers out there. That you just don't get to that level as a 25-year-old, and here they are at 25, 26-year-old kids. I keep calling them kids again, not derogatory, but you're leaders of an NBA franchise. You're the face of the franchise and all of that pressure. And you handle that. Sometimes you don't handle that very well. So it's a lot. It's interesting. I'm fascinated by that human dynamic. I'm going to stop talking about all of this stuff now and take a break. When we come back, my conversation with Brad Stevens, which is very much in line with what I was just talking about, the human element, the human conversations he had with these guys, his role in the team, what he does to be human, which is a funny answer. It's going to come up right after the break here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. At UCLA, I got an opportunity to talk to Brad Stevens. The Celtics had practiced there before they played the Lakers, so this goes back a couple of days, but it's not time-sensitive necessarily. I had a chance to talk to him for a story that I was doing for Mass Live about his connection to the Celtics, the human side of things. Talked about a couple of different things. We talked for about 8 minutes. So I'll play the whole thing for you here so you can have like a little sense of what that conversation was like. There is a lot of background noise because it's a big, cavernous, old gym that everybody was bouncing the balls and shooting around. So there's a lot of background noise, so please be aware of that. But I've kind of messed with the settings here and done a little bit of editing to draw some of that background noise away so you can hear Brad and hear me talking to him. So here's my conversation with Brad Stevens.
I've noticed you had like some really down times this season. You had the shoving match in Miami. You had just different times, Kyrie, all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Every time we've sat there and come up to you afterwards, you have a big smile on your face. You're like, it's almost like, oh, great. Not like, oh, great, but you have a challenge.
Right.
You seem to like enjoy every next challenge that comes up. Is that accurate?
I mean, I don't think you want necessarily to go through the downs of a season, but you know it's inevitable. And there are opportunities to move forward from that. Those can be coachable moments. But they, you know, it may not be. You know, it may not be something that you're able to move on from quickly. I just think the longer I've been in coaching, the more I've just tried to stay away from the ups and downs of it and try to stay in the moment. What do we need to try to fix today? What are the root of our issues and how do we get there? And knowing it's not always going to be fixed in a day. But I guess, you know, I don't think as I look at it as like I'm happy that those things happen, but I think it's more like, all right, this is part of it.
Yeah,
you know,
but it's that,
and it's
part
what
of
we
it.
Signed up for. I kind of think, you know, my old boss. This is a great line he told me. I think you'll like this. My boss at Butler, Todd McFighter, brought us in. We were, you know, we had won big his first year, won big his second year. We lost a couple of games, and he brought us in and said, now this is what we get paid for. We don't get paid to ride the wave of happiness. You know, we get paid for when everybody's down, when, you know, things are going south, and we have to stay the course.
It's interesting. It brings me to your role. Like, I don't think people, fans, understand how different the NBA game is.
Yeah, it's much different
than any other level.
Yeah.
In this, you have a different role each year with the team.
Yeah.
What's your role this year with this team?
John, it kind of changes week by week. But I think if we're at our best, then I'm just like everybody else, and that is I'm focused on what I do best to bring to the table, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, we've got it. Guys know generally what to expect of them. We have a way of playing. We're calling things on the fly. We're preparing for the next game. We don't ever get out of that rhythm because nothing's taking us out of that. But inevitably, in years, things happen. Like you said, you got to respond to different challenges that happen through the season. And sometimes that changes what your responsibilities are as a coach in that moment. You know, and it can go from being, you know, being hard and being hard on everybody and conducting hard practice, being hard in film, whatever the case may be, to maybe just being a shoulder to be there for. You know, it changes day to day, and you're dealing with human beings. And that's the other thing that's real. I really believe these guys, because of the level of scrutiny and because of the level of praise, they just need to be someplace where they can just be them, and they don't get always get all the scrutiny or the praise.
Right.
You just be a human being.
Be a person.
Yeah.
Now that's one of my things when I'm covering the team.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that people know that these are humans.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I've seen, like, you're big into the mental wellness stuff.
Yes.
Right? So, like, that's always been my initial thought is there's something bigger than all of this. And at the same time, if we can find a peace and contentment in our role within a team, then we can have a special team. No matter who's on your team, you might not be able to win a championship, but you might be able to maximize your group. And so, who knows how long that takes. We haven't been able to do it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But we're getting closer, I hope.
Right. So you had that plane ride. Kyrie, I think, is a good example because he's a 26-year-old kid. 26-year-old, still a kid in a lot of ways, but you've got this high pressure. You're expected to be a leader, all of these things, free agency, all that stuff. You talk about him needing a place to be human. How do you create that spot for guys to just be a person?
Yeah, I don't know that I'm as good as, you know, or as some of the people that are in this position, or all I'm trying to do is treat everybody the same and move on to the next day and try to help guys enjoy this, at the same time challenge themselves, become the best they can be, work together as a team, recognize what their teammates bring to the table, recognize what they bring to the table, mesh it all together. And I just hope that, you know, ultimately they can walk out of here and say that, you know, they treated everybody the right way. It wasn't always fun. It wasn't always exactly what I wanted, but, you know, we're treated fairly.
Sometimes you got to be able to tell people things they need to hear.
Yeah, sure. That's part of coaching, right? That's not always the fun part, but it is. And you're doing that almost every game at some point, unless it's a perfect game, which we never have had. So you're used to that, and if you have enough equity built up in each other, it's easier to handle it from each other.
What do you do to be human?
It's a good question. It's a really good question. I don't do anything else. You know, I said long ago that the hardest part about being a coach is I am not able to be a fan. And then you know, the probably what suffered the most is spending time with people outside my family or outside the job. And that's something that, you know, you need to take time to find to do. I try it my best of my ability, but I spend every waking minute I'm not here with my family. And like you'll see, like my son's flying out here today. Like we try to involve them as much as possible in this. And I think that's an important thing, not only for us to do, but for our players to feel like they can do too.
I'll wrap this up.
Yeah.
Just balance. I mean, honestly, yeah. Like I said, I believe in balance.
Yeah.
And it's hard coaching, hard things. It's just your eat, yeah. Drink, sleep. Is there a moment, is there a time during the day where you just find somehow to get like just a little bit of balance in your life? And what is it?
No, I think you have to. And, you know, again, I think sometimes, obviously, balance comes easily when you're spending time with your family. And, you know, you just appreciate it even more when you travel as much as we do. But then I think you also find that balance in those individual one-on-one conversations, because those are times where you're not talking about down screens or ball screens. You're just talking about, you know, we're all trying to figure this out together. This is a great challenge. You know, we're all unduly praised or unduly scrutinized, and we're right in the middle of it. And the only people that can really understand that are the ones that are in it. And so it's good to have those, like, individual conversations, whether it's with Kyrie, with an assistant, somebody else in our travel party, Danny, you know, other players. I think you can share that experience. And I do think that helps you kind of keep a level head and just kind of stay the course.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
I could have talked to Brad Stevens for half an hour if they'd let me. And Brad, to his credit, wasn't stopping me. I kind of had the internal clock that said, I've talked to him for long enough, so I stopped. But from there, he's just a very interesting guy. And I really enjoy his stances on mental health and connecting with guys. There are he's figuring some things out as a coach. But I think connecting with his players, for a guy who wasn't a player himself at the NBA level, being able to connect with those guys at this level and give them that leeway. And again, you have to read the story that I wrote on Mass Live covering that, because interesting comments from Marcus Smart and from Kyrie Irving about their appreciation for how Brad handles things. So, go read that. And again, I hope to bring you more of this kind of stuff as the season goes along. Talk to these guys in group situations and sometimes maybe in solo situations. So when I have the opportunity after the story has run to share some of that, I'm going to try to do that too. So hope you enjoyed that conversation with Brad. When we come back, I will share my conversation with Rich Kimble, my appearance on Sports Talk, The Zone in Bangor, Maine. I'll share that when we come back in the Locked On Celtics podcast. I do a regular Tuesday appearance on The Zone in Bangor, Maine with Rich Kimble. It's always fun. And since I haven't gotten into some of the basketball questions, some of the basketball topics that you might be curious about, I'm going to share that because he asked me a ton of questions here in our approximately 8-minute segment. So here's that.
Hey, up next on Downtown, it's time for us to talk basketball. We do it every week at this time with John Corrales of MassLive.com, getting ready to wing his way back from the other coast after a successful road trip, a late bump in the road, but other than that, pretty good.
Yeah, I think if you take a little step back and do a little 30,000-foot view of what happened in California, I would say that this was a successful road trip. You can push in and really find some flaws and things that they really should have done better. But when you consider how they were looking when they went to California, a 3-1 road trip is fantastic for them. And it gives them some building blocks. And I think the guys feel pretty confident that if they clean up a few little things, that they'll be right back on track.
Now, last night was ugly pretty much right from the get-go. Nice to make history, though. The most points given up in, 24, 25 years by the Celtics?
Yeah, that defense was pretty terrible. They just completely forgot how to play pick-and-roll defense, and what we've seen when their defense is at their worst like that, it's impossible to win. They're not a team that can play poorly and really come back and win against a good team like that. 140 points is obviously too many points to give up, but like I said before, they feel like if they could communicate a little bit better, Marcus Smart, Al Horford after the game were saying, clean up some communication issues, and they'll be able to get back to where they're supposed to be defensively. And really, there's one or two breakdowns each time in the defense that really hurt them last night. And all it takes is that one, because if one guy's out of position, one guy's not doing his job, then everything falls apart. So if they can clean that up, then we'll see a much better defensive team. You could, if you wanted to, chalk it up to the end of a long road trip and guys were just ready to get on out of there. It's a little disappointing, though, that they couldn't keep that focus for one more game. But like I said before, all in all, not too bad.
Not at all. What's the status of a Jason Tatum's shoulder?
Sore shoulder. They're not really sure where it happened. He kind of said he bumped it and he aggravated it in the Sacramento game. So they're calling him day-to-day. I don't think it's a big deal. I would expect him to play on Thursday.
Really terrific piece you had. Your one-on-one a few days ago with Brad Stevens was just outstanding. Boy, he's an interesting guy. He certainly seems to get it more than a lot of coaches out there.
Well, first of all, thank you. Brad is, I think he just sees the world the right way, especially when it comes to these NBA players. And personally, one of my biggest things when I'm covering the team is to try to get that human element out there. These guys have extraordinary gifts, but they're humans with extraordinary gifts. And a lot of time, I think when people see them on TV, they see them as some sort of character or a video game character or something like that, that they don't have emotions and they don't get fatigued and they could, and just by sheer virtue of them making millions of dollars, they're not supposed to act like other humans act. So, and Brad Stevens understands that very well. And the one thing that I thought was really interesting that Brad said was, these guys, the only people who know, who understand what's happening are the guys who are in it. So the only people who understand what Kyrie Irving is going through, and I use the term going through, not as like this is some big trial and tribulations or something, but there are ups and downs when it comes to playing in the NBA. And the people who understand what he's dealing with are the people who are on that plane, the people who are around him, his teammates. And if you lose a connection with those guys, then you really lose a connection to somebody that you can have a good, solid human interaction with. And that's what we all need sometimes. We all need somebody to talk to on bad days just to get stuff off of our chest. And you need somebody who gets it. So I think when we're talking about being human and that big plane ride that they took over, that was what he was talking about, that getting that connection, these guys connecting with each other, talking to one another, understanding that some of the things that have been bothering them, they need to just get past and get back together playing as a team. And if they can do that, just being there for each other as teammates, as adults who have the same job, that's going to really help a lot of the problems they've had on the court.
We're talking to John Corrales of MassLive.com here on Downtown. Was it good for this team, and specifically, was it good for Kyrie Irving to get away for a while?
It was. I think the time away gave them that opportunity, like I just said, to kind of hang out together and just be together as friends, as just coworkers, to just get to know each other a little bit better. And that's always got value. I mean, I go back to the Italy trip that the 08 Celtics took before the season and how much that accelerated the chemistry. There were obviously other factors at play with that team, but That trip, that preseason trip, is universally seen as like the impetus for them kind of coming together right away. So that opportunity to get away from home when something goes wrong, you can't just retreat to your own little sanctuary at home. You have to deal with it. You have to, if you have a bad game or somebody makes a bad pass or something is said in the media that gets taken the wrong way, you go back to the team hotel, you got to be on that bus, you got to be in the same building, you can't just escape. And you work some of those things through, and then you realize as you work some of those things through then it wasn't such a big deal. So getting away is good. And now, after all of this time away, getting home is going to be even better.
One of the guys who's really been scuffling, and you wrote about it in your observations on what was learned on the road trip, is Marcus Morris. What's going on with him?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I think he's reverted a little bit back to some of the extreme isolation. I think he's been struggling. Well, he's obviously been struggling with his shot. And I think that's starting to permeate a lot of his games because he's trying to find his offense, and it's just not there. And when he's not finding his offense, then he gets frustrated, and then that impacts his defense. And if his defense isn't there and his shooting isn't there, then he becomes very much not useful to the Celtics and really ends up hurting the team. I think there were some stretches last night against the Clippers where he just missed open shots, and it cost them defensively. He wasn't staying in front of anybody. He was just positioning was bad. He needs a good, like, 8-for-10 shooting night. He needs maybe some home cooking, maybe going back to see his son, maybe something. I don't know. But he needs to clear his mind and stop focusing because he's clearly pressing. He's clearly trying to do too much. I mean, he had a breakaway layup, and he missed the layup. Like, that's not common. It's not just a shooting slump anymore. But it does start with his shooting. If he can't hit those open threes, then I think that just really taints the rest of his game. And right now he's in a bad spot. Whatever he needs to do, meditate, get a massage, go, I don't know what it is, but go do something that's going to clear your head and get back out there and just start playing free and shooting.
A little home cooking sounds good for everybody, John. Hey, we appreciate you making time for us before you hop on that plane. Travel safely, and we'll catch up with you again next week.
My pleasure. Talk to you then.
Hope you enjoyed that conversation, and we will get to a lot more. Celtics practice again on Wednesday, so there will be more conversations had with the players. We'll get a little bit more of a sense of where they are heading into that game against Sacramento. Just a good feeling of how they are kind of fatigue-wise and mentally and all of that stuff. This has been a very unique episode of the Locked On Celtics podcast. It's not the way we usually do it, but it's a podcast, especially on a big, long travel day that was difficult to kind of get through and put a show together. But I hope you enjoyed what I was able to put together for you guys. We'll be back tomorrow. Me and some of the other guys will be here. Some combination of us will be here tomorrow. And, of course, after the game on Thursday, when we'll hopefully recap a win against the Sacramento Kings. So for you new listeners, again, this is not how we usually do the show, but again, something unique, and at least you see that when things aren't necessarily ideal for us to record, we get a show out there for you as best we can. So please follow me on Twitter if you haven't, RedsArmy_John. Jay King, my partner, he's from The Athletic, and he's a beat writer as well. He's on the road with the team like I am. So he's at By Jay King, and Sam Packard is at Jam Packard. Follow us all on Twitter. Send us your thoughts. Interact with us there. Subscribe to the podcast. If you're a regular subscriber, please give us that 5-star rating. Good review. Share the podcast. Tell everybody. Listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.
Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked On Celtics.